everyone. We are back. Alexis Nunez here with Nate Saunders and Lawrence Edmondson with more of ESPN's Formula One podcast. It's all about Germany today as we look back on all the action that went down at the Nürburgring for the Eiffel Grand Prix, where history was equaled by Lewis Hamilton and Danny Ricciardo finally got on that podium. And the big story, I would at least say, is that Nate Saunders, your curse on Danny Ricciardo since you wrote your book about him back in 2018 has finally been broken.
Yeah, it's over, guys. It's done. The drought is done. Yeah, so that book came out in August 2018. I know we've spoken about it on the pod before, but he's not been on the podium since then, and he obviously left Red Bull the day before it came out and all of that. So yeah, it's finally, if you want to read a book about the Daniel Ricciardo who did get on podiums before with Red Bull, you should go buy it. In Pursuit of Greatness is the name of it. I plugged it right after the race, and I thought it was quite funny. So,
and you're plugging it again.
I'm plugging it again. I'm just going to keep plugging it and see if they randomly message me like, we've had a real spike in sales recently. What's that about? I'll be like, well, probably me. Awesome story though. Really good to see him back on. We didn't get to see a Shuey though, which was a real shame.
So I know,
maybe he forgot that was something he used to do. Maybe he can't do it with a mask on. I don't know.
No, I heard about this. Apparently, he just forgot in all the kind of like celebration and stuff on the podium. He just forgot to do it. But he has promised to do one before he leaves the circuit. And I think it's going to be on social media. So keep an eye on Ricardo's social media channels and you'll get the Shuey that I think, well, we've all been waiting for, haven't we?
We have all been waiting for. And I feel like now I can finally, peacefully buy Nate's book. I don't know what kind of good co-worker / friend I am that I don't even have your book, Nate. But now I can at least buy it and breathe easy to
read. Cursed. It was cursed until today, so I don't blame you. I don't blame you. But now, if I hear that any of you don't have it by next week, I'll be mortally wounded by that.
No, I'm going to go buy all the coffees literally right now. I'll probably give some to my Aussie neighbors as well and be like, guys, you can read it in peace because Danny Ricciardo has gotten his podium, so we don't have to poo-poo on Nate too much for doing the commentator's curse / author's curse, I suppose. But it is broken. We'll get more to Danny Ricciardo in a bit, but let's just pay off the fact that Lewis Hamilton once again matched history. Michael Schumacher's record of race wins, 91. Lewis right up there with a win today. Valtteri Bottas wasn't there long enough to give him a massive challenge, but Lawrence, I suppose, let me start with you here because, again, I spoke to Nate about it earlier, and I know that it's another day and another race win for Lewis, but just all the sentiments attached to being back at the Nürburgring, the fact that he is equaling the Michael Schumacher's record. We know that this is someone that Lewis says constantly he does look up to. And then the fact that they made Mick Schumacher present him with the helmet. Like, I'm not crying, you're crying.
It was a great moment, wasn't it? And yeah, I mean, we saw this coming from the start of the year. You probably could have predicted it a couple of years ago if you'd done your maths, but it was still a very big moment. And there's one really nice quote I saw from Lewis, I think, immediately afterwards to TVs, where he said that he used to watch Michael Schumacher race when he was a kid. And then him and his brother would go upstairs and play video games and he would be Michael Schumacher and he'd go and win it. And at that time, you know, he said in his wildest dream, he could have imagined being on Schumacher's level, but one of those kind of crazy dreams that, you know, when you're a kid you have, and you know, sadly for most people they don't come true, but for him it has, and that in itself is just such a fantastic thing and really well deserved as well. I know there's lots of people that say, well, he's in the best car and all that kind of stuff. Well, the same is true of Schumacher for starters, so that's always going to be the case if you're going to dominate the sport in that way. It's just the way Formula One is set up. But that really underplays the role that he plays within that team, in the same way that we saw Schumacher helped build up Ferrari. And this was another thing he talked about afterwards, and he said, you know, well, that's true as well, you've got to look at the team, you've got to look at, in Mercedes' case now, those other 2,000 people that are there doing it. And he's done them all proud, and he's put himself right at the top of the history books, and he'll keep winning. You know, I don't know how many races he's going to win. I mean, we could all take a punt on it, but we really don't know, because he's still got probably another 3-4 years in the sport.
And Nate, for you, because I know, obviously, like, I think it was 2 or 3 weekends ago, even when we had Juan Manuel Correa on the podcast too, we were saying that it would kind of be nice if, you know, the challenge for Lewis, or the fact that Lewis was eventually, because it was more of a when, not if, he does eventually match Schumacher's record, if it just was delayed a little bit, because it really, for the sentimental ones like us, It would just be brilliant for him to do it in Germany at the Nürburgring, of course, and with everything, you know, surrounding the Michael Schumacher legacy. So did it just finally pull on your heartstrings and live up to the expectations that I suppose we all are hoping for?
Yeah, 100%. And as Lawrence mentioned, you know, the Mick Schumacher thing was just perfect. And there was a really nice moment. You know, Lewis always says he's not that big on records. You know, as a quick aside, Kimi Raikkonen also became the most experienced F1 driver today, and he couldn't give less of a damn about that. You know, Lewis cares a bit more about records, but he's always kind of downplayed them a bit and said, look, I don't, you know, it's just a number to me and all this stuff. But when he was given that helmet, there was a moment before he went on the podium where you could see him looking at it and just kind of shaking his head. And you could see that it was kind of sinking into him then what he has achieved. And I think Nürburgring is a perfect place to do it. There's a bit more history to it. It was a bit more of an entertaining race. If he'd done it in a processional race in Sochi, it might not have felt the same, etc. There were fans there and all that stuff. And yeah, it was just, I think everything about it in the Nürburgring was perfect. And I completely agree with Lawrence. Like I was trying to work out earlier, like if he does have three more seasons, if we assume he wins the majority of races next season, so let's say he wins 10 to 15, you know, he's pushing 110, 115, 120 already. So this benchmark for the likes of Max Verstappen and Charles Leclerc is going to be even further up the road to beat. But I don't want to say it's going to be unbeatable, because everybody was saying that about this record. I remember watching Formula One when Lewis came in, and again, you would never have bet Lewis was going to do it then. Alonso seemed like the guy who would do it, and then Vettel seemed like the guy who would do it. And it's only really since this period of domination started that it actually became about Lewis could do this. So, yeah, an amazing achievement. And I think that we'll appreciate it more once he's gone. It was similar with Schumacher, I think. Once he left Formula One, everybody started to say, okay, this guy is great. When someone's winning in the best car at that moment, I think for a lot of people, it's easy to be a detractor of that. But when we actually all have a chance to kind of sit back and look at this spell, we'll think this was pretty unreal. And just a great achievement. And I feel like I should put money on how much he wins. I feel like that should be something. Maybe if we all work out as a podcast, you know, ourselves, we can all stake our claim for how much he's going to win. And I think we'll all be wildly wrong, because I think he's just going to keep winning beyond our expectations.
I think so too. I was actually, before this, I was going to ask you guys to see if you could even try to begin to give me a number, you know, Lawrence. Nate just kind of tried loosely, but we probably should like sit down and actually try to work it out. But a point that Nate brought up earlier too is that this has got to be so freaking intimidating for all of his rivals. And I mean, you look at the talent that you see with the likes of Max Verstappen, and when I see him out there, I feel like he's got a bit of Lewis in him, that killer instinct, that absolute drive in him that, you know, he just needs to be in that car and he will push 150%. Charles Leclerc as well. But I mean, when you see these numbers that Lewis is probably heading towards, you almost wonder if it might be even past them, you know, not to hold them back either, because they're absolutely talented. But it's getting to a scary stage, isn't it, Lawrence?
It is, but we all said that about Schumacher. If you had asked anyone when Schumacher first retired from Ferrari, will anyone beat that 91 wins, they probably would have said no. And if they said yes, they probably wouldn't have been able to put a name on it. Maybe they would have said Fernando Alonso. He was a driver that looked like he was going to take over Schumacher's place at the top of the sport. But I think he got 31, 32 career wins so far. He's coming back, but that's what he got so far, which shows you how difficult it is. On the other hand, Max is only 23 years old and he has 9 wins already. And when Lewis was 23 years old, I think it was his first year in Formula One. So if you look at it that way, time-wise, Max has the time on his side, but he just needs to get himself into one of those dominant positions like Hamilton. And that is the key to it. And that's what's so difficult. And the thing that makes me think, well, perhaps no one will ever beat Hamilton's record, is that Formula One is pretty determined, as Formula One as the brand, to make racing more competitive going forward. And they're going to try a lot of things, I think, to try and trip up Mercedes and any other team that gets a lead going forward. So while that may slightly curb Lewis Hamilton's win rate, which I think is about 10 plus per year at the moment, it may also mean that lots of other drivers struggle to have that period of dominance that's led to what Hamilton's been able to do and what Schumacher did back then. But we're looking 100 plus, aren't we? There's no doubt about that. That's only 9 wins away now. So if you kind of did the maths, you'd probably say 120 odd.
Yeah, you can see it. 120 is what I would guess. Danny Ricciardo made a great point after the race. He said if you add up all of Lewis's wins right now, it's the equivalent of, let's say, over 5 years, he had won every race. That's basically what his win tally is. You know, it's an amazing amount of race wins. We obviously have more races now, but yeah, for him to for us to even be talking about somebody finishing with triple figure race wins is just insane. I know they had more races than in Jim Clark's day and Fangio's day, etc., but you can only win in the era you're in. And Lewis's win percentage is also really high as well. So yeah, it's crazy. The more we think about it, the more we're just like, this is mad. We should like change the topic for the sake of everyone else, just because otherwise I'm just going to be talking about this the whole time.
I know it is. I feel like when you do sit down, and we were so used to seeing Lewis Hamilton obviously dominate that it's almost like, oh, well, shock, Lewis wins again. Of course he does. But when you do sit down and you do crunch the numbers together, you're kind of like, gosh, it's not been given to him, rightfully so. He does earn it. And I thought he said something nice after too, in the sense that he said that even though he knows that the way that he dominates and he always looks like he's in control, it's hard to see that for him. He does feel that it is actually a difficult job, in the sense that he said, you know, do you know what it's even like to try and keep off someone like Max Verstappen behind you, knowing he's chasing you, that, you know, a young, hungry buck that's after him. And he said it too. He said, you know, that the Red Bull car is looking much better too, that it's improving. And then, of course, his own teammate, Valtteri Bottas, you know. I thought Valtteri had a nice move today that, you know, took a little more gall than we usually don't see from Valtteri. So before, obviously, all things went wrong, and we'll get an update as to what we probably think went wrong with the car there. What did you think of that, guys? Is that the Valtteri that we want to see more of?
It was super unlucky for Valtteri. Like, we've kept saying on this podcast, we need him to get his elbows out and fight. Yeah. And, you know, we've definitely like run that into the ground, you know, as an opinion. So when he did that, because as soon as he got into turn one behind Lewis, I thought, well, there you go, that's race over. And then, you know, he kind of went over the curb to kind of get back past Lewis. And Lewis was actually really complimentary of that after the race. Mm-hmm. Was like, great driving from Valtteri. But then Valtteri made the mistake that lost him the lead, and then he had the car issue. So on that one time, he takes the fight to Lewis and does it. He has all these things go against him. So he's probably thinking, what on earth do I have to do to beat this guy? Which has always been the thing with Lewis that we've said before. But it was nice to see some fight, and, you know, I'm not going to get carried away. It's still, you know, one race out of a lot, but this is what we were asking Valtteri to do, and he did it. So I feel like it would be harsh to kind of be too hard on that mistake that he made, because I think he was still in the race. It would be interesting to see what Lawrence thinks of it, having kind of been in the Mercedes sessions afterwards, but Valtteri seemed to still be in that race. You know, he had to make an earlier pit stop, and he would have been an alternate strategy to everyone else, but it seemed like there was still, you know, a hope at least that he could maybe get back up there before that engine issue hit.
There was because he basically ruined his tyres with that lockup, and that unfortunately that's the other side to Valtteri. That's the side to Valtteri that makes him not quite as good as Lewis. When was the last time we saw Lewis throw away a lead by locking up into a corner? I'm sure it's happened at some point, but it's so rare, and it was coming under pressure from Lewis that Valtteri did it. But it wasn't race over at that point. As Nate said, it would have put him onto a two-stop strategy. The other two drivers were looking like they were going for a one-stop. But had the race panned out normally with no virtual safety cars and safety cars, a two-stop probably would have been the faster one. So he was still in it at that point. And then came about the virtual safety car, which allowed Lewis and Max to make a pit stop while the rest of the field was going around at a slower speed, which means you don't lose as much time compared to your rivals. And then it started to look a little bit less likely. And then I remember looking at the split times of Valtteri, and all of a sudden after the virtual safety car, he was losing, you know, kind of about 3 or 4 temps every mini sector in the lap. And that was clear when there was something wrong. And Mercedes diagnosed it pretty quickly as an MGUH failure. The MGUH is the bit of the hybrid system that recovers energy from the turbo. So all the kind of excess heat going out the exhaust, it takes that and it turns it into electrical energy that they can use to deploy. So as soon as you lose that, you've lost over 2 seconds of performance, and really the engine isn't going to work as it's meant to anyway. So they had no choice but to retire him. So yeah, you got a feel for Valtteri, but lots of positives to take from it as well, because for the first time, you know, in a while, he was on pole position, and he was 0.25 seconds ahead of Lewis in qualifying, which is a big margin to be ahead of Lewis. And it was also a lap from Lewis where there was no obvious mistake. He was just that bit slower. And, you know, we don't often see that. So Yeah, I got a bit of respect for Valtteri coming out this weekend because he's built on that Russia win, which I know JM and Nate kind of like to poke a little bit. But I think the confidence that he showed immediately afterwards with his radio message to whom it may concern and the rest kind of carried through to this weekend. So championship's over, let's face it. 69 points is the gap. And, you know, Lewis needs to be leading by 75 after Turkey to make sure he's won it. So really, that's probably going to happen, isn't it, at the very least. But it's good to see a bit of fight come back from Valtteri.
Amazing, because if Valtteri was, if Juan Manuel's worst fear came true, and that would be Valtteri listening to all our last recent podcasts, he probably was thinking, goodness me, what do I have to do to get a compliment from these guys? And who'd have thought that he'd be getting us all excited in a race that he did not finish? Like, but it's true, we finally saw that bite, and that was definitely something that we wanted to see. But let's talk about another bite, a bite from a honey badger. Because that's where we have to go next. Danny Ricciardo on that podium. First time since Monaco 2018 and ages for Renault, really, to get that podium too. Nate, this is something that you've been talking about as well, constantly saying that, you know, obviously Danny Ricciardo, knowing the amazing driver that he is, it was a matter of time. It was just whether, you know, the car that Renault obviously does give him is able to match up to his talents. But we were seeing progress week in, week out, and we've seen how close he got to it, and now we finally can say he did it. Brilliant race from him.
Yeah, this really felt like kind of third time lucky, I guess, for Ricciardo and for Renault, because we've seen them close to this podium this year already. I think it was in Belgium, Ricciardo was lamenting. He was like, I needed one more lap to get Max. Mugello, he was right there in the fight, and then Albon got past him at the end. So this has kind of been in the ether for Renault. I know that things have happened around them to, you know, to prompt this. We obviously had Bottas not finishing and Albon still not getting the best out of the Red Bull, but Renault are putting themselves in that position. More specifically, Ricciardo's putting Renault in that position. And it looked like his podium to lose. And it's a great story for Renault as well, because there's been so much criticism of them over the past couple of seasons. They've almost been stuck in limbo of what they wanted to do. You know, there was potentially a budget cap coming in for so long, they didn't know how much resource to throw into Formula One. But for Cyril Abitbol as well, getting Ricciardo was such a big coup. For him to then turn around and say, look, I'm going to McLaren, it's easy to forget now, but when that happened, Abitbol released a kind of very, you know, punchy press release after that. You know, it was clearly a very emotional thing, and he mentioned that today in his post-race press session that I was in. And he, you know, he said that at the time was raw and emotional because we felt upset and we felt like we were going somewhere and Daniel was leaving. So he said this is vindication for us that we're doing the right thing and that we're going in that right direction. And you know, Ricciardo's obviously going to McLaren next year. They've got Mercedes engines, but you wonder whether he's starting to think again. You know, we talked about this when he left Red Bull. Is he going to start to think, well, have I made the wrong decision here? Renault feel quite good about where they are because Ricciardo's leaving. They've got Fernando Alonso coming in. So I actually think as good as a result as this was for Ricciardo, it's much, much better for Renault because they've been waiting for this for so long. They've seen Racing Point get a podium. They've seen McLaren get two podiums. They've seen AlphaTauri win a race. And this whole time, it was like, if they don't seize on this kind of weird, unpredictable year at least once and get a podium, you know, you wonder when they're ever going to get it. So to kind of get that off their backs, I think is quite important. And I think I said to you earlier when we were recording our video hits after the race, I actually don't think this would be the last time we see Renault on the podium this year. It's been unpredictable enough. Yeah, there's been enough kind of circumstances around races, and Renault now seem to be right there. They're kind of where we thought Racing Point were earlier in the year. We were like, Racing Point at the team, if anything happens up front, they're right in there. But Ricciardo seems to be the guy who's always there taking those opportunities. So yeah, great performance. I guess we can talk about the tattoo in a bit, but I want to hear what Lawrence thinks, because his bold prediction at the start of the year was Renault finishing best of the rest behind Mercedes. Well, at the time, Mercedes, Red Bull and Ferrari, but we can forget Ferrari. And that looks like it's actually a really, really wise prediction at the moment because, you know, they're kind of in the ascendancy right now.
Oh, Lawrence the Wise. Lawrence the Wise, please impart more knowledge on us.
I'll take all the confidence I can get while it still looks like that might happen. Who knows what's going to happen in the future. They're only 6 points off Racing Point, who are currently in third position. So it's very doable. And you have to say, there's been a bunch of updates that have come to the car. The team were talking about some error updates to the rear where they've just unlocked a huge amount of performance, and that's very good news because keeping very similar chassis next year, okay, the aero is changing quite a lot next year, but if they're on top of it, if they're putting numbers into the wind tunnel and they're getting stuff out that works on track, that's half the battle done in Formula One, because then once you have that stability, you can start to develop. So all the signs are really good. And I know we talked about this either the last podcast or two podcasts ago, but is Daniel Ricciardo starting to regret the decision to move to McLaren? Because it seems like he's doing all the hard work, and guess who's going to come in and reap the rewards? It's going to be Fernando Alonso, of all people. And you know that he's probably going to, you know, capitalise on it because he is that good. So really interesting situation. And now, as you start to look at it going forward, and I was thinking about this the other day, you've got Red Bull losing Honda engines going forward. You've got Ferrari in a hole by, those are the words that the CEO of Ferrari has used, that's going to be tricky to get out of. You've of course got Mercedes dominating. But then you look elsewhere and you're like, well, you know, who's the team that's going to take that challenge to Mercedes? And increasingly with a budget cap in place, with a facility that's starting to come on song and starting to work, and with an engine that's looking pretty good, a lot of the high power circuits we've seen Renault look very good, you start to think, well, actually, Renault's not such a bad place to be. And so, yeah, Fernando's decision earlier this year where we said, well, you know, it seems a bit desperate coming back, actually starting to look pretty good. So, yeah, we're still a long way off. They've still got a huge amount of work to do. You saw that so often in the race when it played out normally, how much further ahead the Mercedes and Verstappen were compared to the rest of them. That's still a huge gap to close, but Renault are definitely moving in the right direction. And that's not always that easy to do in Formula 1.
And imagine that. Like, we've always said Fernando Alonso is in the wrong place at the wrong time. But could it be that he's finally moving to a team where everything comes together for him? I'm not saying it is, but imagine if that was the way he finished his career, finally getting the, you know, making the right move and not making one where he ends up in a bad situation. That would be very off-brand for Alonso. I'm sure he'd love that, and I'm sure his fans would love that. But it would be a great way to finish that career. So if that is the case, it's a fascinating narrative.
No, but I suppose I mean, just even in keeping in that same vein, just what do I suppose both your spidey senses kind of tell you? Is there enough there for us to start getting excited of probably a new era of Renault and the fact that Fernando Alonso is coming back? And we know, I mean, we talk about Danny Ricciardo being such a top driver and getting so much more probably than we expected out of this Renault car this season. Imagine someone like Alonso, and just even Cyril after, when obviously the number one question was everyone's going to ask him about the tattoo, which we will talk about too in a bit, but he was like, no, the story of the day, and he said it quite adamantly, is just basically that it's proof. He's like, look, our progress is paying off, you know, and he was really, really strong and emotional kind of about that. So what do your spidey senses tell you? Is this a new era that we might be stepping into come next year?
It's certainly exciting for them. And if Ricciardo's doing this well with the car, you know, Alonso, we know, has always been good at getting the best out of his machinery. Lawrence and I laughed because, you know, I jokingly say Alonso speak is a way you can kind of dictate the way Alonso speaks. He'll say very specific things. And one of them is he always talks about, yeah, what a complete driver he is. And he told F1.com, or I think he said it in a press conference, he's 9 out of 10 in every area, you know. So that's the driver that Renault are getting, a guy that's very, very good at kind of doing everything. So you'd expect, if they do make this step forward, then Alonso's the perfect guy to take that, you know, to take that challenge and to really take the fight to them. So I don't think they'll win. The winning races still seems tough next year, but you know, if they get things right in 2022 and they're in this upward trajectory and Alonso settled in the team, I think that's a really difficult team to beat straight off the bat. So yeah, really exciting time.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it's going to result in a big change next year, and I think Fernando knows that going in as well. He said from the very start that they won't be, but if they can get into that kind of position at the front of the midfield, we've seen Ferrari drop so far back now that's a position where you can contend for podiums quite regularly. So if they can get themselves there, that would be a big step. And then with Renault, they've invested a lot in Enstone, where they're based in the UK, in the chassis side where they're based. And it hasn't paid off early on, but that's because these things take a long time to get in place, to bed in, to get the most from. And you just start to feel that they're starting to get that. And for a long time, we kind of saw Renault as this almost like a sleeping giant in Formula One. Obviously, they're a manufacturer team. And they looked at one stage like they were starting to build a kind of Mercedes-style structure. It never really came together. But I think a lot of the kind of cornerstones that were put in place there are now starting to pay off. And I don't think that's going to put them in championship position even in 2022, but I think it means that it's now a much better and happier place than it probably has been in recent years. and that's the start of trying to build something in Formula One. You know, you need that basic structure, you need that factory with investment in it, and also being able to produce aero parts that you can trust, and they're starting to get there.
All right, well, let's get to what the true story of the day is, even though Cyril will not agree with us, but he looks like he might be heading to the tattoo shop. Daniel Ricciardo at the end did say that, you know, he's got a couple of tattoo artists in London where they do spend a lot of time. So close to us, I might have to take you guys for some tattoos as well if you let me design them. And it's finally come true, guys. It's finally come true. And I don't even think I can picture in my wildest dreams Cyril sitting down actually getting a tattoo. And we all have to kind of guess as to what he's probably going to get.
Yeah, so again, speaking to Cyril this evening, you said he didn't want to talk about it on TV. Well, I asked him, and I kind of said, like, you know, it was
like
a few questions in.
Like the rebel you are.
Yeah, it was a few questions in, and I was like, look, let's get to the real meat of this, you know, of this press conference now, the tattoo. And the key on it is, and he kept saying it, is that Ricciardo gets to pick the design, but he gets to pick the size of the tattoo and where he puts it on the body. So fair. I suppose he can kind of make it, you know, make it quite discreet. Ricciardo said after the race, he wants it to be a mix of Ricciardo and a mix of the Nürburgring. So it'll be interesting to see what he does, because Ricciardo is such a funny character. You imagine that, I mean, he's the last person I'd trust to design anything for me that I had to have permanently on my body afterwards. But Cyril, to be fair to him, you know, he said, I'm a man of my word, I'm going to do it. So this actually came from the British Grand Prix last year. Ricciardo had a new tattoo. He was taught, and Cyril asked him, he said, look, I don't have any tattoos. What's the mental process you go through to get one, to design it, to, you know, to think, okay, I'm going to have this on forever. And apparently Ricciardo just said, all right, well, if I get a podium, how about I design one for you? And Cyril was like, yeah, okay, that sounds fine. And so he's stuck to it. So it's a nice thing he's going to do. And this is actually quite exciting now, because I imagine that Renault are just going to absolutely milk this content-wise. I mean, they should. If they don't, then, you know, they need to really look at what they're doing on their media side, because it's such a cool story. And we've almost been talking about it as much as Lewis winning the 91st race. You know, we were just saying before we started recording, weren't we? Like, this has almost become as big a thing. And I think Cyril and Ricciardo are just a bit like, why do they care about this tattoo so much? But it's just kind of a funny thing. And yeah, the fact that it's Ricciardo as well, like, I think, if it was not the only other person I would be more scared of it of doing it to me would be Norris, you know, because I'd just say, what on earth is going to, you know, it literally could be anything. So yeah, I'm sure Ricciardo will keep it, you know, he'll keep it clean and all that stuff. But yeah.
Will he though?
I think he's going to have to. Well, actually though, he's leaving the team. So maybe he doesn't, maybe he's just going to be like, all right, well, you're going to have this for the rest of your life now. But yeah.
Your problem now, not mine.
Yeah. And also, you know, for Cyril Abitbol, who's been so criticized, even going back to when Renault and Red Bull were together, for him to actually physically have a mark on him and say, like, this I got from leading Renault back to a podium, I actually think for him will be quite nice, because as much as he might hate having it, he can say, well, look, this is kind of, there's a great story behind this of us getting there. So yeah, it'll be interesting. But again, maybe that's another one we need to bet on, is what on earth Ricciardo what monstrosity Ricciardo leaves on a Abitbol.
Exactly, because I'm here sitting down trying to think something that represents Danny Ricciardo, but also a bit of Germany, which is what he said, kind of just as a nod to the Nürburgring and whatnot. But I mean, Lawrence, you're such a connoisseur of tattoos. What would you like to see Cyril get?
I really feel for Cyril, because as you probably know, I don't have any tattoos. And I have this theory about tattoos where some people naturally just look better with tattoos. And then there's people like me who just look particularly awkward with anything like a tattoo on their body. So,
I think you can pull it off. You could get a nice sleeve.
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, I also don't have any, and I agree. I don't think it would ever look good on me. So
no, Nate, I think a sleeve would do you very well.
Nah, not happening.
So I've been sat in this podcast. I've been sat in this podcast thinking about what Ricciardo might go for, and I'm not going to try and second guess, because whatever I come up with, his will be 10 times more imaginative and just better. But I'm going to have a punt anyway. And if you take the Ricciardo element, you take the German element, I would say a honey badger, which of course is kind of Ricciardo's spiritual animal or whatever, in Lederhosen, which are wrong end of Germany, to be fair. It should be South Germany for Lederhosen, but it's the most German thing I can think of. And I don't know if Ricciardo's that up to speed with his geography of Germany anyway. So, yeah, a honey badger in Lederhosen is what I'm going for.
That's a great shout. I'd love to see that. Yeah, I might even get one of those.
That's a great shout.
Right, okay, we're doing that.
We all probably should. I feel like that would be a brilliant shout, Lawrence. We should probably call up Danny Ricciardo and see if he's taking, you know, any suggestions. Not that he would ever need, because I know that he definitely has the mental capacity to come up with brilliant tattoo ideas. But that would be brilliant. I was actually thinking, I suppose it depends. I love how we're analyzing tattoo possibilities now. This is exactly what my journalism degree is coming handy for. But I love the fact that I feel like I was thinking, it depends on how fancy Cyril wants it. I feel like he wants a small, simple, in and out kind of tattoo, because I'm not like portraitized with like a lot of shading, because that's going to take him. I mean, I have 9 tattoos, and I know some of my smaller ones that have more detail have taken like 3 hours. I can't see Cyril sitting down for 3 hours. He would probably be cussing Danny after like 30 minutes, wouldn't he?
Yeah, probably. So I think on that, if it was me, I would, you know, Valentino Rossi, when he used to race the MotoGP and he just had his face on the top of the helmet, I would just be like, you're going to have my face on your body. And it's got to be, that's got to be a certain size. You know, you can make that as small as you want, but it's still got to be big enough for the guy to draw it. So just for the rest of his life, he looks on his arm or, you know, his neck or wherever he has it. And it's just like Daniel Ricciardo with his like kind of, you know, yeah, just with his current look. I think that would be my bet. But I do like the Lederhosen idea.
So, I was going to say, what if he just gets Danny Ricciardo's smile? Like his smile and nothing else. It's almost like the cat from Alice in Wonderland. Because you know, when you see that Danny Ricciardo smile, you know anywhere that is him. And imagine if Cyril just wakes up and looks on his arm every day and there's just this wonderful set of teeth from Danny Ricciardo looking right back at him. Oh my goodness, the possibilities are endless. I feel like this makes me want another tattoo, guys. Shall we get our ES? You know what? We're going to sit down and we're going to think of what we can bet on and then get a tattoo and I design it. I'm very good at my tattoo design.
I think we need to get you to the McLaren launch next year. You went to the McLaren launch this year, didn't you? So we need to get you back over there and you can make all the bets you want with Daniel Ricciardo, and then me and Nate can stay firmly out of it.
Yeah, I want absolutely nothing to do with this.
Don't worry, Ricky's finally managed to get him, Cyril, to come around. I feel like I'll eventually get you guys to come around. If we're giving till 2021, then I have a lot of faith in myself. But we should do that. I'd happily definitely let Danny Ricciardo. I had to stop for a second because I was like, would I let him design a tattoo for me? Because I feel like he definitely would just go for the most craziest thing. But you know what? That's the best part about tattoos, I guess. They all have a good story behind them, even if you didn't really want them. But anyways, speaking of crazy stories, though, Nate and I also touched on this late earlier, because one thing we did not expect this weekend was to see the return of the Hulk.
That was Hulking back.
The Hulking back. And I mean, you know, I love me some of that. And the fact that Nate, how you said it earlier, how he was at 11 a.m. on Saturday, he was having a coffee, not even in the vicinity. And then all of a sudden, before he knew it, he had to jump in the car and actually put his body through all of that once again, because of Lance Stroll not feeling too well. I know we'll definitely get an update on Lance Stroll and exactly what's really going on there, what you guys think is going on there. But first, let's just talk about Hulk, because Lawrence, Nate and I said it earlier that given the fact that it was such a whirlwind again for him, and even though he is a professional driver, we know exactly this when you're not mentally in the game, it's you disconnect a bit. And the fact that he literally had to come in at the 11th hour and still finished inside the points, pretty good day for him, right?
He just continues to make this case that he should be in Formula One next year. And, you know, even Nate, who I don't think is the biggest Hulkenberg fan, can deny that right now. You know, the way he's been performing on these one-off returns is very special. Of course, you know, you can point to qualifying and say, well, he qualified 20th, but that was his first time in the car since Silverstone and on a track in incredibly cold conditions. And, you know, you could see him building up each lap, and he really only had 4 flying laps to try and set a time. And that was very squashed in to try and get that many flying laps into a qualifying session. It means you're going out with more fuel than you necessarily want in the car and stuff like that. So it was hugely impressive. And then, you know, all of that is null and void anyway, because he then took it from 20th to 8th. And that's a fantastic result. So, yeah, I think it's just him putting his case down that, you know, he deserves to still be in Formula One. And I hope that the other teams are paying attention, the teams with vacancies left are paying attention, and he gets a space on the grid.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just want to clarify. I thought he was great. You know, I know we've had this
long
running joke.
Oh, that's the president of the Hulkenberg fan club.
Well, it's been a long running joke, and it's based on you know, actually in Germany last year, you know, based on a bad interaction at a media press conference. But the thing with Hulkenberg, I think Lawrence is completely right, is that if he's had three auditions for a space on the grid next year, I think at the moment, if I was to list the 20 best drivers, you know, who can get in an F1 car, I think Hulkenberg would be in there based on this, based on what we know about him. I know he's not been on the podium before, but to have acquitted himself the way he did at this race, I think was fantastic. And, you know, Haas to me seems like a really good option for him. I know they're being very, they're taking their time over picking who, you know, who they could take, but there's also still a lot of people who are talking about what Red Bull are going to do next year, and you know, ESPN Mexico have been very excited recently about the prospect of Perez maybe going there. Red Bull never go outside of the Red Bull driver program, but if they were ever going to this year, they've got Perez and Hulkenberg there, just like, hey, look, you know, almost like gift wrapped, you know, yeah. Like on a plate. Like, if you want these two guys, you can basically plug them in and just put them into your car. You don't have to expect they'll beat Max, but they'll be doing better than Albon is doing right now. Mm-hmm.
There's still also Pierre Gasly floating around.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and because, you know, my theory with that is if you put Albon back to AlphaTauri with Gasly, that's the ideal situation for 2021. But then where does that leave Red Bull? So, yeah, that's just me kind of speculating. But there's definitely a home for Hulkenberg on the grid next year. I think he's better than a few of the drivers that are out there already. And yeah, today was fantastic. He got driver of the day for good reason. And I think he must have done about four laps of the Nürburgring in qualifying. I think it was four or five. So for him to have been that good in the race, I was just expecting him to be almost embarrassingly like a non-factor, not as any kind of knock on him, but just because he had so little preparation. And he hadn't been doing simulator laps in an F1 car of this circuit like all the other guys would have been. So yeah, really good race. And I think actually probably one of the drives of the year when you consider everything that he had to put up with going into it.
All right, well, I suppose for anyone that, you know, might have been living on under a slight rock this weekend when all this news broke, it was because Lance Stroll had some health issues, I suppose. He wasn't feeling well. We heard that it was like a bit of like a tummy bug or something, Lawrence, Nate, but you guys are chuckling because I feel like you have other ideas as to what's going on, or there's a bit of a gray area shock that's going there. So did we get an update as to exactly what the full picture is and when we can expect him back?
A recent point, we're actually quite specific about his symptoms, which is always a bit unfortunate if you're the guy who's not feeling well. And Omar Zafnauer said that he couldn't stray more than 10 feet away from a toilet. So that gives you an idea of the reasons why he was in trouble. But and I don't doubt any of that. I'm sure that's absolutely true. And, you know, that does have a big impact on the body, loss of water and so on. You know, it's a big thing. But we so often see drivers just go that extra mile and get in the race car anyway. You know, I know, you know, the doctors that they deal with and stuff like that, you know, they can take some pretty hardcore drugs whilst remaining within, you know, what's sensible for the body and what's allowed in the regulations and, you know, and so on to kind of help themselves through these things. I can think of a few examples in my head. Lewis Hamilton last year at the German Grand Prix was in a really bad way. And anyone who's watched Netflix will see how ill he was. Okay, different illness. It wasn't, you know, a problem down there. It was something else. But still, he managed to get himself in the car and managed to compete. Mark Webber...
Brave that you can try to compare anyone to Lewis Hamilton in this. He's almost superhuman in how he just conducts himself.
But I mean, you know, the truth as well is that none of them are superhuman. They're all humans. And another example is Mark Webber, who once vomited in the car in Fuji, vomited within his helmet, Fuji in Japan, while he was racing, because he wasn't well. And, you know, he went into the race knowing that. So it is, we don't see it happen that often. So, but, you know, let's give him the benefit of doubt and say that's fine. The thing that didn't sit well with me, and I think a number of people have asked questions about, and we haven't yet had a satisfactory answer, is with the concerns around COVID, which are very real. Of course, we saw Perez taken out by COVID earlier this year. Is that Lance was last tested for COVID on Tuesday before the race, which is completely within the normal procedures, because he did have some other symptoms. He had some flu-like symptoms, which immediately rings a lot of alarm bells. And the team were very concerned. They said they tested him about four times and he kept returning negative results, and that's fine. But then when it got so, you know, his health was so bad that he couldn't get in the car on Saturday, they didn't then test him for COVID, which just to me seems strange, because it seems like an obvious thing you would do. within the code of conduct that everyone has signed going into a Formula One race weekend, if you show any symptoms, you're meant to go and get tested, because, of course, the big concern is that it spreads further. So we just didn't get an answer on why he hadn't been tested again and whether he would be tested again. And it could be completely innocent. It could just be the fact that, you know, that that wasn't the case. The team said that they'd taken medical advice and, you know, the symptoms weren't in line with COVID, therefore he didn't need to do it. But to me, that just seemed like a bit of an odd one when we're living in this, you know, time when any kind of illness is a concern. And, you know, he's in a position where he could have quite easily been tested. But not saying there's anything untoward there, I just found that strange. And I think a number of people pointed that out over on Saturday night when it became clear exactly how the situation had come together.
Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of it was kind of weird. And given that the team had already been through that with Perez, you thought they would have maybe, you know, there might have been a more transparent way of dealing with it. But again, we're speculating. But just given the time that we're in, it seems like they could have maybe explained themselves better or given a better account of what happened. But obviously, you know, hopefully Stroll is you know, fit and well again for... He's got a bit of time to rest up, yeah, before the next race. But, you know, given what we were told, it doesn't sound like it should be that long term. So, yeah, he should be back in the car for the next race.
Yeah, definitely. We'll definitely hope he does recover quickly enough. As much as we do love enjoying seeing Hülkenberg come back despite all the odds and still pull out some pretty clutch performances. So I guess, as you guys said, that's just a testament to the immense driver that he is. So hopefully we do probably see him back. And we know Nate wants to see him back come 2021. So we will.
I'll happily. Like, I've always been someone who... The frustrating thing with Hülkenberg was exactly that, was that, you know, there's always been this question about how talented he is, and he just never kind of lived up to it. So, you know, and that was the, going back to Germany, that was kind of the question that I think pushed him over the edge of that media session. So yeah, I'd love, especially if he came back with a competitive team, I think it would, yeah, be, you know, we were all getting super excited at Silverstone, like, oh, you know, maybe he'll be on the podium, but it would be great to see him on the podium. So yeah, if we get that next year, I think it would be a nice story for that career to kind of have that second shot.
I know. Always a bigger person. Love to see it. All right, well, I suppose we can start wrapping things up quickly. But before we do fully put to rest all the action we saw at the Nürburgring, final takeaways from you guys. Anything else that caught your eye, apart from obviously the three main stories that we thought deserved talking about today?
The one thing we weren't expecting from this weekend but did stand out was the fact it was a two-day race weekend. Of course, Friday was so foggy, the medical helicopter couldn't take off, and therefore they couldn't have any track action. I'd like to point out that I did semi-predict that ahead of the race. Although I said it would happen on race day, it happened 2 days earlier. But anyway, but proof again that these two-day race weekends, which are actually trialling in Imola on purpose, it's down as just 2 days at the track, work quite well. And, you know, no one kind of, apart from the fans who had to sit through the rain, which was really unfortunate, no one really missed out as a result. And I think there were still so many question marks going into the race, and we talked about this before on this podcast, and it's a point that often comes up, is that if you take away a lot of the testing time, the practice time that teams have, they have fewer answers, they have to make more guesses in the race. Talking to one of the engineers afterwards, they said no one could have predicted going into the race whether it was a two or one stop strategy. And, you know, that's what we want. That's what we want from Formula One, because that makes the races a bit more exciting. So I think that was one of the things which was clear. And then hopefully we'll see more of the same in Imola.
Nate, what about you? Your biggest takeaway?
So it's looking away. I mentioned him earlier, but this, I've always been, you know, I've been on the fence a lot about Alex Albon, and kind of said, you know, we see glimpses from him that, you know, are encouraging. I still think he's very talented. But this race for me really kind of knocked me off any remaining kind of bandwagon of he needs to stay at that team. I think that clearly with him, I'm not saying he should leave F1 at all. I think he needs to go back to AlphaTauri and have a year back there like Gasly's had, because we're just not seeing from him anything close to you know, what we need to be seeing. But this was such a bad race for him. If you actually look at this and you look at how far up the road Verstappen was, you know, Albon was in two different collisions. I don't know what he was doing in that clash with Kvyat. He got him a penalty. He just drove straight back across Kvyat. He was complaining in the race. He was like, you know, these guys, referring to AlphaTauri, he's like, these guys fight me so hard. It's like, well, yeah, of course they do. Like, you're in the seat that both of them have been demoted from. Yeah, I just thought it was weird. And again, today we saw him bought in early because he's made this mistake at the beginning and he's put onto a different strategy. And it's just becoming a really tried and tested, well, actually quite a tired kind of formula of his races. And I wonder, again, we've seen they've been very supportive of him. And I actually think that will continue. And I'm not having a knock of him or of that strategy. But yeah, this was a race where he should have been, you know, he should have kind of comfortably maybe been in that third position if you look at the pace of the Red Bull. So yeah, after all that hype of his podium in Mugello, this and Sochi have kind of, you know, it's kind of taken the wind out of that a bit. And if anything, it's kind of been worse because after Mugello, we were talking about this is Alex's time now to kind of kick on and a bit like we were saying with Bottas, you know, kick on and kind of and show that he's gained that confidence from it. And he just doesn't seem to have really turned a corner. So that was, for me, that was kind of low key one of the things I took out from it because it was, yeah, it was just a bit of a gut punch.
And meanwhile, Red Bull were closer to Mercedes than they've been at any point this year, pretty much, certainly in qualifying. Mm. So that really, you know, tells you a lot about where that car was. And he qualified behind Leclerc. Great effort by Leclerc. We should probably also mention that. You know, that was a mega qualifying effort. But Albon shouldn't be that far behind in that car. And, you know, it's frustrating because, as Nate said, we've had to say that so many times this year. And we keep giving the benefit of the doubt. But it's getting pretty difficult. It's getting pretty tired to kind of back him up. So, again, we hope things change. But, you know, Portimao, another track that all the drivers don't know, Imola and Turkey, you know, they're not circuits where he's going to feel comfortable necessarily. And that's what he needs right now because he's not comfortable with that car where it is. And that car had some development parts on it as well this weekend. And yet it still didn't seem to suit him. It still seemed to go towards Max. And Red Bull aren't going to stop that. They aren't going to stop developing the car for Max because he's the one that can challenge Mercedes. And the more they do that, possibly the more that Albon will continue to struggle.
And just think, if Albon had been up there with Max at the end when Verstappen, I mean, they had so much time back to Ricciardo, it was over a minute. You know, if it had been Lewis and then two Red Bulls, as Lawrence kind of alluded to there, you pit one of those guys, Mercedes have to react to that. Mm. You know, and that changes the whole complexion of that final race. You've suddenly then got two Red Bulls on a different strategy, and Mercedes would probably be like, all right, we're going to have to respond to what Max does. So either way, you put yourself in a position where you're like, well, if we lose this fight, we did everything we could to beat Lewis here. And with him not being there, it's just, you know, Lewis obviously at the end was just kind of bringing the car home. So it is a huge, huge thing. And if Red Bull is as close as we think they might now have moved up to, Albon's got to be up there just for Red, you know, for the sake of Max winning races. You know, he needs to be there. So yeah, this was a real indication of how big a blow that is for Red Bull that he's not.
Well, I think that's definitely a conversation that's going to continue because we have been saying it. And I mean, Red Bull have been asked it too about how much Max Verstappen could probably benefit from having, you know, Alex Albon up there to help take the fight to Mercedes. But for today, it just was not meant to be. But now it's time for us to wrap. We have a bit of a break before Portimao. Excited because we always love these unknown territories, so to speak. We'll see what kind of surprises they can throw up. But please be sure to still tune in to our Formula One podcast in the week. We have some exciting stuff coming for you. But until then, it's bye from me, Nate and Lawrence.